Music can just elevate the way you feel just by hearing something. It's so beautiful and pulls you to a certain emotion. And while under, you know, a heightened state, tripping with music is just incredible. Life with music is incredible, though. It's not, doesn't have to be some sort of anything more than just really feeling the moment and allowing the music to hit you. It's transformative feeling sometimes. It feels awakening. It feels beautiful. It feels like love. So I watched Parasite. I finally watched Parasite. I can't believe it's taken me this long, but sometimes that happens to me with things that are going on in like mainstream media. Specifically, like, even though I think it'll be good or something, I specifically don't watch it. I put it off, and then I miss out on the zeitgeist for a little while. And Parasite is one of those things that I've been meaning to watch literally since it came out. And it's got this insanely powerful message that I think it's a slow burner, because you watch it and you don't necessarily absorb every single piece of it, even though like I watched the whole thing and absorbed everything of it, but it just didn't hit me. It like started adding on, it started kind of snowballing into that concept reflecting into other scenarios that you've seen. So the concept of that entire movie is the lives of very wealthy people and the lives of very poor people, and it kind of highlighted specific things about it, like how different it is, how one thing will affect one person more than the other. There was also, you know, like there's just so many different concepts that you start going into. Like at this one point, there's this person living in this unknown bunker in this house, and he's hiding there because he's so in debt that people are out to get him, because he's gone all the way to like street creditors to get credit to pay his debts. So he's in a bad spot. He's in a spot that if he was out and about, he would die. He is a rung of what we see as somebody who needs to hide themselves from society. The people that are willing to hide themselves, live a life that is hidden from society because of how bad it has gotten, because of how it's like a representation of destitute. Literally the best option for you is hiding under the ground and feeding off of people's scraps. And at the end of the movie, huge spoilers of a 3-year-old movie here. At the end of the movie, the one of the main characters becomes a murderer on the run and hides in the bunker. And that's another representation of this social outcast. And I'm not, you know, obviously we have a reason to outcast somebody like that. They're a murderer. But it's a representation of this destitute like how bad can this person's life get? This person's life can get so bad that they become so resentful of people who have more than them that they kill one. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is the poor person in this movie kills the rich person out of resentment and anger towards them for looking down at, whether, you know, probably not consciously. I mean, there was a little bit of conscious behavior of that from that character, but I think, you know, he was just, it was something that he found a certain aspect of being poor. In this movie, he found that, that smelling bad, that smelling, you could smell like a poor person. And that was something that crossed the line for him. And there was a couple instances of this man smelling that way and rich people finding it offensive, not saying something about it, but trying to avoid it. The wife opens the window while the poor person is driving her around, and the rich man plugs his nose while near this guy who is dead as well. He's not just this destitute man, but he's, you know, someone that this guy's looking down upon, definitely. He plugs his nose. And that, with the building up of resentment, makes this poor man act out in this way where he kills the rich man. And so it's just, you know, it becomes a representation of what resentment can look like, because of how you perceive, or because of your experience, basically. And I, you know, it made me think also, like, this movie did a really good job of showing, it didn't, I guess, yeah, you know, it showed how terrible life can be for somebody who's poor. This family, none of them had jobs. They were doing a job that, you know, at the beginning of the movie, they were folding pizza boxes for a company, and it was like a gig, and it was a bad gig that they got paid like very little. And you know, there's something within that too, within the you know, the poor feeding on the poor in that whole scene. But what that shows me, oh dang, I got distracted there. Yeah. And so this was, you know, this is a bad scenario. It showed multiple bad scenarios. The poor family's house got flooded because they're at the bottom of the alley in a semi-basement. You know, and the rich house is unscathed. So there's that whole thing. But the thing that I found interesting there was it didn't show, although it did a little bit, it showed this, the rich people having problems too, but the problems were so different. But they were also in some ways very interesting, because there was a lot of like kind of trying to hide things. Like the mother was so afraid and scared of being so vulnerable that there was this problem with her son. And it really shocked her when that was brought up. And the girl is hiding the fact that she wants to have this relationship with this boy. And there's sneaking around in the house. And they're not very connected as a family. They're actually hiding and are all kind of separate from each other. Not very connected. Whereas when the poor family takes over that house, and yeah, they're celebrating in this moment, but they're all able to be themselves. You know, the boy tells his family about how he wants to marry this girl. The daughter gets drunk and swears, and they have a fight. You know, the parents have a little tiff, and then they do a joke about it, and they're able to joke and be themselves. And the rich family doesn't really have this connection. And that's because of the lives they live. Whereas the poor family is so connected because they only have each other, and they're all just dependent on each other, and they all have nothing, but they all look out for each other. It's just a, you know, it just makes you think about these kind of broader situations that play themselves out quite frequently with less difference between them in our society, the way we've built it, because of the way it's built. And it also makes certain people have certain experiences. And certain experiences can be felt in a way that will make one's lives feel better. You know, there's this thing where there's something really, really powerful and really beautiful about being connected in nature in ways that a lot of rich people aren't, and poor people are. Now, you see the downside of that as well. You know, being more on the receiving end of any sort of natural disaster or any sort of nature being harsh, because nature can be harsh. But you also are outside more, most likely. And there's this thing that even goes further, where I was thinking about how that relates to today. In some way, it relates to the back to the land movement and the hippie movement and the homesteading movement of getting more connected to the day and feeling what it's like to survive more. And, you know, like, there's lots of people who, and I've had, you know, a shower in a waterfall, for instance, and the water is heated by the sun, and you do it at the hottest time of the day. You know, this is maybe like a fresh, cold-ish, you know, but perfect temperature outside. You have a shower like that, and it's refreshing, and it's clean, and it's beautiful. Or you can have a shower in a regular shower in your house, or a shower in a fancy shower that heated floors, water comes out from the side. What one is going to feel the best? What one is going to elate you the most? And, you know, it just feels like there's something to that, wanting to feel these really natural things and getting a lot of fulfillment and feeling a lot of beauty from them. But I think people can probably feel that from, like, something else, but I don't know if it's as deep. You know, I think the shower in the waterfall is really rich. It's much more complex than just cleaning yourself. It's an experience, and it's really, really layered and full, and you feel it more, you remember it more. It's more impactful than just a regular shower in your house. And the same kind of goes for, like, you know, when you're hanging out with somebody in person and you get on something really funny and you start laughing and laughing, you get to a deep sense of laughter because you're sharing that laughter with that person. You're sharing that concept, that idea. You're holding that same space. You're existing in one mind and enjoying it and laughing and playing in your idea mind. And then you could also have that exact same experience where you're existing in that same idea mind, but you're looking at a meme. You're looking at a picture on Instagram that opens your mind in some way that is very silly, very funny. It hits your humor bone exactly like, you know, a real life experience would. You know, it's a funny joke to you. The most you're going to do is this. And if you see enough that are just kind of good, you know, ones that don't blow you away, you're going to be just walking around looking at those with a slight smile on your face, like kind of a zombie. Just kind of like, yeah, this is good. This is good. I'm okay. And it's not going to fill you up. It's not thick. It's not rich. It's not full. It's not complex. It's simple. It's and it's not shared. It doesn't have an experience around it. You know, there's that quote that to me has meant many different things, but there's that quote by Christopher McCandless who said or wrote, happiness is only real when shared. And I don't think that's true. I think that quote is a real, you know, the reason that it's very powerful is because that man was alone. That man was very alone when he died. And he realized that he is probably alone a lot more than he needed to be. And he found that when he looked back at his memories, that the ones that were really rich were shared. And that's a powerful message. But I think happiness can be felt. Obviously, happiness is real when you feel it. And you can feel it in lots of different ways. But I think the really rich, deep happiness you can feel is with other people. So that being said, I've been alone for 3 weeks. I've had very, very minimal communication with people. And tomorrow my partner gets back from traveling. And that's what got me thinking about starting to share with somebody again. And I don't know, it's just an interesting thing. It's just an interesting thing being alone and being yourself. And then being yourself when somebody is around as well. And like thinking about how much joy I had. And it's like, wow, I've definitely had a lot more joy when my partner is around than when I'm alone. And that feels really, really good. Because it feels like there's a reason to share myself and who I am and a reason to do things. I find, yeah, like, you know, a reason to be silly, a reason to dance, a reason to, you know, it doesn't give me a reason for everything in my life to have a partner, but it definitely gives me a reason to be connected to somebody a lot. And I think I want to build that with more people. I want to build more friendships that are deeper. It's very hard in today's age and in my current location physically. But yeah, travel will be a new experience. And I just want to connect to more people because I think amazing things can happen when we connect in person and start to work together. You know, we look at a lot of the problems we have in this world and especially in today's age, and it's because we don't work together. We all see each other as other. And that's another thing that movie Parasite was kind of showing, was there was some aspect of this kind of poor fighting poor. And it's like the crab bucket idea, where you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket and one will try to climb out, but the other ones will pull it down because they're trying to climb up. And it's like the poor people putting each other down and taking advantage of each other. It's like, you know, stealing a car stereo from a vehicle that's too old to have not expensive enough to have a car alarm, and avoiding the rich ones, you know. It's the poor feeding on the poor trying to climb up. And the whole system is very rigged against us unless we take advantage of people. It's really, really very, very strange. But the way to get ahead in capitalism is to make other people work for you for less than you make. So you make a bit of a profit from their work. That's how every single business in the world works. It's crazy. It's very, very crazy. But it has to take advantage of people. And that means it can't be mutually beneficial, but financially it's taking from them, but it can also be collaborative. But ultimately that's how you build something, whether your motives or morals behind how you act that out, like no matter how they're orientated, you're still doing that thing where you are profiting from somebody else's work. And it's like, why can, you know, Bezos have a mega yacht and his factory workers can't have pee breaks? It's and don't quote me on those things. Those are just like basically the broad idea of it. But there can also be, you know, there can be also be situations that are more cooperative, where people are learning and people are both mutually benefiting from it, and maybe somebody's benefiting more and somebody's benefiting less. But you become a manager of people who are all benefiting equally, and you're just basically skimming some. And you are skimming some because you're managing people. I mean, it's very interesting, but that is what a business is. It's all managing. It's all managing labor. And it's what the labor is. You know, is the labor coding? Is the labor designing? Is the labor, like physical labor of building? It's all to sell things, to make money, to continue the whole process. It's all trade. I'm making 1/100th of this iPhone in this factory, and I will trade that to you, the consumer, but I won't sell it directly to you. I'll just move it down the factory line, and this whole company that I work for will market it, find people to buy it, and I'll get a small little percentage of that. Now it's 0.00000000, you know, all the way down to one, you know, way down there of a percent of what that is actually worth. But there's all the other people taking that small percentage, and everybody's just taking a percent based on how much they own of that company. Ownership is how you build wealth, and you can create things. And by creating, you know, like literally when I create a video or when I create this podcast, I own it. I have created it. You have to create something to own something. But you can also own parts of other things by investing, usually money. And, you know, you're investing into an employee as like a big company. You're investing in that factory worker. If you're, you know, a huge, or not even a huge company, but a company that manufactures something, you're investing in that person's work. You're also investing in all the work that came for those materials. It's very trippy looking at that as some like kind of huge pyramid that we live in. Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's interesting how it could go back to very simple times where, you know, think about life for humanity before trade. Like I'm saying there were certain groups of people who did not trade. I mean, I know there was lots of trading in different, you know, non-colonial European times, between nations and, you know, tribes or whatever. But there was a time before that. There was a time before that where, or for certain groups of people, there definitely were, where they were isolated and they did not trade. They all just worked together and they all shared. Imagine a sharing community where people are not taking advantage of it. I mean, that's the problem, is people just take advantage of it. It's like, why... Like, why would somebody believe in a communist government if they saw that some people were more like, you know, driving around in yachts and fast cars while there were other people starving? I mean, what would, like, what? That's not communism. That doesn't make any sense. That's like, it becomes an oligarchy, right? And it's like basically the same thing with democracies. I mean, how do people become candidates? Like, you cannot really become an independent candidate and gain any sort of traction. You have to go through a system that creates you, and that a party behind you, that basically people are voting for parties. How many people really get to know the individual politicians in their sector? I mean, I live in Canada where it's parliamentary, so you vote within your region, and then however many people in parliament get elected determines the majority party of who can elect a prime minister. But those people, it's like those parties are just institutions. And people are just voting for those. They're not voting for the individuals. And if they are, they're voting for the individual at the top, not the individual that they're actually voting for. And the person at the top is so, like, you know, it's just insane. Like, it's just very, very strange. And basically they put a lot of power into whoever they vote. It's like becoming famous because you won The Bachelor or because you won Survivor, and then people are following you and voting for you and liking what you do. It's the same thing. It's you have gotten chosen from a lottery. But I mean, you've worked hard in that lottery of life. You've worked as hard as you can, probably, to get to the top, definitely. Nobody really gets there out of just pure luck, of whatever, you know, industry they're trying to get into. Politics, or basically politics is the same thing as showbiz. Hey, baby.
Hey, what's up?
Phone calls can be pretty cool. Phone calls, you know, conversations, man. Conversations can be so good. I like doing this solo thing, but, oh man, there's nothing like having a good conversation. It just, you get into some stuff that's so deep sometimes, and it's just beautiful because you're sharing. I don't know. It's a great thing. People need to talk more to each other about deeper things. That's for sure. Start being themselves more. And with that, I'll play you out with a little more Joji. Goodbye, everybody. On this show, you know, I've talked a lot about money. Investing is an interest of mine. Money is really important. It's a store of energy of ourselves, and basically we can use it to create in this world. We can make all these different things happen just because of the money that we either use, and the more you accumulate of it, the more you can create. And it's just it's a fascinating subject, and it's a lot easier sometimes to actually save money than it is to make money. So today's sponsor is Mint Mobile. And if you're in the States and you have a cell phone, you can probably save a lot of money by switching to Mint. I mean, Mint has these plans. It's like $15 a month, unlimited calling, unlimited texting, 5 gigabytes of data. They have 4G, 5G plans. And for $30, you can get unlimited data included with that plan. And so it's like $30 unlimited data. And the internet is so powerful. We need to get on there. We need to learn. I mean, you're using the internet right now to listen to this, to download this. It's important to have, and you might be able to save a ton of money by switching to Mint. So check out the link in the description for Mint Mobile, and we get a kickback here. We get a small commission. So it really, really supports the show. It's super, super important to feel like I can actually do this and make a little bit of cash, this podcast. So it's going a long way, and it's really important for you to save money as well. So if you are spending too much on your mobile, go at least check it out. See if the coverage is good for you, if the service is good for you. And basically, it's a smart business as well. What they've done with Mint Mobile is they've basically done what more and more companies are doing to save money and to pass it on to consumers, which is not have a retail store. There's a lot of empty shopping malls out there in the world now because there's no need for companies like Mint Mobile to have a cell phone kiosk in the mall or whatever storefront. And so they can pass those savings from not having to rent and lease that space, not having to employ those people working there. They can employ people in a more concentrated fashion so they can have less employees and serve more people, basically. And they do it all online, all through the internet, and the customer service is supposedly pretty good still. That's the other thing too, is you don't want to like lose things by switching to Mint Mobile. So I would just recommend checking them out. See if it's a fit for you. Basically, when I ever have a problem on my cell phone, I'm calling them anyway. I'm not going into a store. That's just, you're just looking to get upcharged basically by going into a store anyway. So check it out. Links in the description, like I said.